Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. Today we're going to talk about Ellen White. This woman has been listed as the most influential woman by the Smithsonian Institute, the most influential woman in the world. And I know in recent times, probably because she's deceased now, we haven't realized that her writings continue to influence us. And today, to help me with this topic, is Paul Tooley Sr., who has been a teacher, is still teaching, and educator all of his life. And I thought I would just, he's also my dad. So we're just going to have this fireside conversation about one of the most influential women in the world. Welcome, Dad. Welcome, Mr. Tooley.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be able to do it, even though I'm handicapped at the moment with a somewhat of a cold.
Yes, the virus has hit the whole United States, so people can relate to that. Okay, start out by telling us a little bit of Ellen White's story, how it all began.
Well, as I was growing up, I fell on a nail. On my left knee, the nail went in, and it caused osteomyelitis. That kept me from going to school, I was about age six, and therefore I had to stay home. My mom, a third grade educated person, did the best she could, and in doing that, she gave me a lot of books with pictures in them, and some people said, Ellen White, Ellen White, and I didn't know what they were talking about. I said, who's Ellen White? And they said, well, the one who wrote the book. Well, I couldn't read yet. I was about six, just ready to go to school. And so I looked at the pictures and asked everybody who I ever could see in the room, what does that picture mean? What does that picture mean? And so therefore I got acquainted with Ellen White and finally read nearly every book that she's ever written, including the 9 volumes of Testimonies to the Church, The Conflict of Ages, and all the books in between, and became a really, really great admirer of this lady.
You know, I think of her, and can you tell us an experience that happened to her as a child that impacted the rest of her life?
Well, she was a very excellent young student, and one day when school was out, some of the students got in a discussion about a certain thing and expressed their opinion. But it divided the group of children as they were going home into a couple of groups, the one side taking one issue and the other issue. And one girl picked up a rock and threw it at the group up ahead, and it hit Ellen White in the face. And consequently, she was knocked out. Blood started running around her head. They got her home eventually. Her daddy wasn't home. Her mom was. But her daddy returned home after, a couple of days. And he said, where's Ellen? And they took him to her room. And he did not even recognize her. It had smashed her nose and face all in. And she was in a coma. Semi-coma at least. And laid that way for several days before she came out of it.
At what age did she have her first calling, that she realized God had placed a special calling on her life?
When she was 18 years old, she went to hear a person by the name of William Miller, and there was also two others, Hazen Foss and William Foy. William Foy was a African-American, and Hazen Foss was not, but consequently, they were both born in 1818, and they both died in 1893.
Wow.
A rather amazing coincidence or whatever. And God had given them a calling to and especially William Foy, got to have the visions for the African Americans, and Hazen Foss also had a vision or two, but they didn't want to carry through with the work that God expected of them, because God works in this kind of way, found in Revelation 1:1 in the Bible. It says the revelation of Jesus Christ. Okay, so it's revealing Christ, which God gave unto him. Okay, so God the Father gave to Jesus this revelation to show his servants, that is, like one of his servants mentioned here is John. And he gave this progression constantly and multitudinous times. He uses prophets who are not Bible prophets necessarily. I have a list of about 25 texts where it mentions prophets. I won't take the time here to go to all of them.
Yeah, and the Bible says that the young men will dream visions, and, you know, so it's not just an exclusive thing. It's a phenomena that will continue until Jesus comes again.
Yes, and 1844 was a key year for Adventists. They weren't necessarily called Seventh-day Adventists, but they were Adventists. The entire United States was caught up in information given out by these people about God and his program, like the revelation mentioned. But in the book of Amos, chapter 3, verse 7, it says, "Surely the Lord God will do nothing, but he revealeth his secret unto his servants, the prophets." And she fit the prophetess mode. And I think that people should pay attention to her.
Yes, tell you said prophetess mode. What kind of phenomena do you see in a person that is having having visions from God?
Well, I have been given by my son-in-law and daughter an encyclopedia called the Ellen G. White Encyclopedia, which I read through. It took me 3 months to read it through. But I came across on page 1249 a description of some of the things that happened when she was in that vision, or in any vision for that matter. They differ. Her first vision occurred, of course, in December of 1844, and there's a couple of queries about her last vision, but one of them is that it was in 1915, shortly before she had her accident, which led to her death. But occasionally there would be, she'd be sitting, and all of a sudden there would be an exclamation that indicated something was being presented to her. Her eyes were open, not with a vacant stare, but as if she were intently watching something. Her physical position might vary. At times she was seated, at times reclining. Sometimes she'd walk about the room and made graceful gestures as she spoke of matters presented to her. There seemed to be an absolute unconsciousness of what was occurring about her. She neither saw, heard, felt, nor perceived in any way her immediate surroundings. The close of the vision was indicated by a deep inhalation, followed in about a minute by another, and very soon natural breathing was resumed.
Oh, so she actually quit breathing, or?
Yes, she did not breathe during any of this. Well, immediately after the vision, all seemed very dark to her, but within a short time, natural strength and abilities were regained. One example of these phenomena relates how Ellen White is said to have held at arm's length a large Bible for several minutes and walked around a room pointing to Bible passages in this Bible. So that was quite something, I thought.
So all of her visions really were not pointing to something significantly new as much as magnifying the message of Jesus Christ.
That's correct.
So what impact, let's talk about her health, you know, having suffered that horrible event as a child, her health was always rather poor, but she did have an impact on the overall health message of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
And of the United States of America, and of Australia, and of Europe, and of The only country she never did, a continent she ever did get to, was Africa. And I'm so thankful that God gave me and my family an opportunity to be missionaries in West Africa, because I find that even though when we were in West Africa, though she hadn't visited it, she was well known by multitudes of people there. And I'm trying to think of some of the health practices. She, of course, clothing was a big one. She saw women with their skirts rubbing the ground and picking up dirt and filth, and she said that should change. And she had food in mind, quality of food, eat less sugar, and eat foods such as fruits, grains, and nuts. And she emphasized all of the healthful things that are being emphasized in today's world, even though there's a lot of sugary and unhealthful foods on the market. The organic foods, the things that are really healthful, came from her, and one of her helpers, Dr. W.H. Kellogg, is well-known for cereal manufacturing. So she actually influenced everything from clothing and food quality and health reforms, medications that were very, very toxic. She had that. She had a lot to say about that, and had that put down, and more helpful things came in. And the whole quality of a life that we have, anything on the side of quality, if followed through, can find her involvement with it.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing. Well, we have to take a break right here, but when we come back, I want to talk about holidays and Christmas trees. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion, or partner with us. Send us a contribution or a show suggestion at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783, or call us at 301-824-3162.
If you missed part of today's show, you'd like a copy for yourself or to share with a friend, then please go to our website, lifetalk.net, and click the podcast page. All of LifeTalk's talk shows are posted on our site and are free for you at any time. If you don't have an internet connection or you just want a compact disc of today's show, call 800-775-4673 with your credit card ready, because you'll be asked for a small donation to help cover our costs. Also, we'd like to hear what you thought of today's show. Please send us an email, include the title of the show on the subject line, and send that email to office@lifetalk.net. That's office@lifetalk.net.
Hey, my name is Sheridan. I like to give tips and advice off of information. Most of us want to get good grades, so I researched on tips on how to increase your knowledge when you study to get better grades. Here are the two tips. One, listening to Mozart when you study is a good way to get better grades. It is scientifically proven when listening to Mozart, it increases your knowledge. 2. A pastor once told me that it's good to have a devotional with God before you study for a test, or anything. God will help give you the wisdom and knowledge when you simply just spend a little time with Him, and that is a wonderful way to study.
This Kids Talk moment was brought to you by Baltimore White Marsh Adventist School. For more information, go to www.bwmschool.org. Welcome back. Today's title is Ellen G. White. This woman has been named the most influential woman in the world by the Smithsonian Institute, and we figured it would be important for us to bring this information to our listeners. I have with me Paul Tooley Sr., who has already explained in the first half about his introduction to the beautiful pictures and books that she has written. In fact, how many books has she written?
She's written 100,000 pages, and it's in a variety of books called The Conflict of the Ages series, and there's other books called The Testimonies for the Church, 9 volumes. And then there's such outstanding books as Steps to Christ and Christ Object Lessons and a whole number of other book titles.
And I sincerely believe that her message was to amplify the Bible, to amplify Jesus' tremendous love for us. The Desire of Ages is a book that every person must read. The Desire of Ages, I think, was where I really became that converted follower of Jesus Christ. And she, and I believe another purpose, was to prepare us for the end times. The earth is circling down. It's on its last death throes. And her messages give us so much courage and so much information to strengthen our time here through these last years. Well, before the break, I promised to talk about her take on holidays and Christmas trees.
Now, if you don't mind, Dr. Gamblin, I would like to insert here a thought that struck me. The Great Controversy is one of the books that gives end times and gives other information in preparation for those end times. And I'd like to say that your husband, Michael Gamblin, has played a large role with the Review and Herald Publishing Association in helping distribute that book to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And he's to be congratulated. Now, what was the issue?
Okay, so Christmas. We're talking about her take on holidays and Christmas trees.
Christmas trees, she says, should be in every Seventh-day Adventist church. And, of course, she doesn't limit it to that. She believes that in all churches of every denomination, there are Christians who have not bowed the knee to Baal and who should have Christmas trees. The Christmas trees should contain on them, however, a gift to the Lord as well as to other people. So she was not against them. But as for holidays in general, Ellen White addressed the issue of religious and civic holidays, and she referenced Christmas in it, Thanksgiving, New Year's, the birthdays, one time Easter, that was in the Great Controversy of 1888, page 387. She did not promote any observance of these holidays, but instead acknowledged their observance by the Christian world. She encouraged the best possible attitude toward them, suggesting that Christians should align their observance with such holidays to Christian principles of life.
That's pretty powerful. Now, you know, I deal with a school, and we have a Christmas program, and we have some members of the church that will not come to church on the Sabbath that we do the Christmas program, even though our Christmas program is literally, we memorize passages from the Desire of Ages, we sing familiar Christmas carols, but they believe that because in the Bible it says not to have trees decorated, they will not come for that reason. So how do you explain the biblical passage where we're not to decorate trees?
Well, in that case, it was the fact that the people would decorate the trees to worship them. They worshiped the tree rather than the tree producer or maker or creator. And there's a big difference than having a tree in a customary manner for children to enjoy and for a relationship people, that is the brothers and sisters, cousins, nephews, uncles, aunts, nieces, and so forth, family and friends, and not worship the tree, but worship God and use the tree, his gift to us, in fact, to enjoy.
You know, if she were alive today, what do you think would be one of the most surprising or shocking things for her?
Well, she says we should change with the times, but I would think that from my reading all of her works and understanding her position in relationship to God, that she would be most concerned, like the church has a lot to do these days with sports and very concerned about that. But I don't want to denigrate the church, because the church is the one thing that God still wants to bestow his highest regard on, whether it's a church for the Methodists or the church for the Episcopalians or the Catholics or the Brethren or whatever other denomination.
Don't you think when the word remnant, it is all those that truly love Jesus that are from all of the churches?
I do agree with that. And fact is, there's going to be some, quote, savages in heaven. God knows the mind, and he knows how to handle it, and he knows what to do with it. The only problem he has is he gives us the freedom to either keep it from him or to give it to him. He wants the world separated from those that he's going to take with him to a new planet, or to make a new planet out of this one, so the sin won't arise a second time. And he don't want anybody that's going to be there to feel out of place because they can't do the things they used to do here on planet Earth.
Yeah.
He wants everybody to love one another and to do that which is right and carry on the principles of love, joy, peace, long-suffering, all of those things. And so that's why she would be very concerned about seeing a lot of Christians leaning toward worldliness or world-likeness rather than God-likeness.
Describe how she saw heaven to be.
How Ellen White saw heaven to be, she did not put into words, because she said it was so beautiful and so overwhelmingly great that she could not comprehend the words, couldn't find the words to put the description of it down, so she left it.
Doesn't that make you just thrill with joy?
Yes, it does.
And why is it important for us to have this glimpse of the future?
Hope. It gives us hope. And when we see the laws of nature, we see the design in a leaf or in a needle on a tree or a branch in the tree or any kind of a design in nature, we know there has to be a designer. And if there's laws, there has to be a lawmaker. And so we need to have our confidence right up there and have hope that we're going to be among those that's going to take that 7-day trip to the Sea of Glass and the stop off in the meantime at Orion. Oh, I just can't wait.
You know, we pray every night together, and we often talk about that 7-day journey that we can't, you know, our imaginations are too frail to even imagine 7 days traveling through galaxies and on our way to heaven, how glorious that will be. We've come to the end of our show, but I have so appreciated just taking a moment and just lifting our minds from the everyday mundane things to thinking of how our Creator loved us so much that he's even given us a messenger. If we would just take that, the writings are so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing this information with us. And with that, I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.